Chala then, the first parak of Chala. Chala is the what you separate from dough and give to the Kohen as a din like Truma. You only take it off once the dough has been mixed, the water and flour have mixed together. And basically, as the Pesukim say, it has the exact same, essentially the same status as Truma in all regards. That includes only Kohanim can eat it, there's Mispidei Shemaim, there's a Chomesh if you eat a Beshogeg, just like Truma. Okay, so now, we start, the Pesachta asks, on what kinds of bread do you have to take Truma? Excuse me, take Challah. So it says, Chamisha Devarim Chayvim B'Challah. There are five kinds of food, five species of grain, that have a Chiyav of Challah. Chitin, which is wheat, Vasorim, that's barley, Vakusmin, that's spelt, Vashibol Eshuel, that's oats, Vashipon, that's rye. Those are the five species that are chayv and chala. If you have dough made out of those five species, and if you make a dough that's got two kinds of flour inside of it, like a half spelt and half wheat dough, so then that will, if as long as it's got the proper shiur, the required amount in the dough, dough is big enough, so then it will be chayv and chala. The shiur comes out to being 43.2 eggs, okay, which is somewhere between like 1.6 and 2.25 kilos of flour, of dough. Of flour, excuse me, for the dough. Okay? Now, v'asurim b'chadosh mifnei Pesach, once you've got this dough, anything made out of these five grains, you can't, they're usher to eat the chadosh, the new crop, lifnei Pesach, before Pesach, technically the second day of Pesach, when the omer is brought. When the omer is supposed to be brought, or it's supposed to be brought, that's what is matir you to eat the new year's harvest. So until the second day of Pesach, when that Omer is brought or could be brought, you're not allowed to eat from the Chadash, the new crops. Umeliktzor milifnei Omer. And similarly, the Omer you're going to bring as the Korban Omer, is supposed to be the Reishis Katsirachem, the first of your harvesting. So therefore, you shouldn't be harvesting anything else before you harvest your Omer. And just the Omer already is in the beginning of the spring, of course, that's right before the Pesach time. So pretty much nothing's really ready except for the barley anyways, but okay. Vim hishrishu. Now, so the question is that what chadash means New Year's crops, which you can't eat until you bring the omer. But where do you draw the line? How much, because obviously you'll harvest things later and later and later. You'll do that in the beginning, in the middle of Nisan, you'll do your omer, you'll cut it, but then you'll have grain that's going to come out in, you know, July and August, September, October. At what point is it too late? Really, you know, it's like a circle. At what point is it really next year's crops and not till this last year's crops that's now becoming yashan after you harvest it? It's chadash, New Year's crops. Once you harvest and or once you offer your omer, then that New Year's crop goes from being chadash, new, to being yashan, the old year's crops, the mutter. So where do you draw the line? You know, how far past the point of omer can still be considered the omer as being materit? So it says, Im hishrishu kodim la'omer, if the grain took root in the ground before the omer was brought, then ha'omer matirin, then bring the omer, or the day that you could bring the omer, the 16th of Nisan, will be matir that year's crops. Vim lav, but if whatever you're eating in September, October, November, didn't take root in the ground, that piece of barley didn't take root, whatever, until after the omer was brought, right? So then, ad shiyavo ha'omer haba, you have to wait till next year's omer to eat from that crop. So it depends on hishrishu, which we said takes 14 days. Because the machlokas, that's how it came out. Okay, Mishnah base. Ochel mehem. So now we're talking about the five species of grain. So we just can discuss that a little further. Not related to challah at all. Ha'ochel mehem kazayas matzah b'pesach. If you eat kazayas of matzah made of the five grains on Pesach, yatzad echov aso, then you're yotzi your chov of eating matzah. In other words, if you eat rice matzah, if such thing exists, or millet matzah, you won't be yotzi. But if you eat spelt or oats or rye matzah, you would be yotzi. Kazayas chametz, if you eat a kazayas of chametz of dafka, these five grains, chayav hi kares, that's the chi of kares on Pesach, as opposed to if you eat rice, of course, there's no kares. This arav echad mehem b'chol haminim, if you have a mixture of these things and other things, remember we saw the mixture, there's an issur of having even a tarovas of chametz on Pesach, so if you have, you know, your wheat is baked into a chalent, whatever it is, even though it's just mostly chalent, a little bit of wheat, harei elu, sorry, Hareza over Pesach, if you have any of the five species, that will still be over you, make you be over in the Bal Yira and Bal Yimatza of the prohibitions against having chametz owned or, you know, seen or found in your rishos, your possessions. Hanoder min hapas, if a person makes a neder and he says, I will not, he says, pas, hare pas, pas means bread, hare pas usur alayka korban, whatever he says, you know, pas is forbidden to me. So that takes a neder, I'll never eat pas anymore. So, or he says umin atvua, he says hare hatvua usur alay, the korban, whatever. So then he says that that he will never eat tvua again. Those two things, it's usur behem. So what's pas and tvua referring to? Dafka first thinks of five species. So if you say, you know, hare pas usur alayka korban, so then, thank you. Then you could still eat milipap, what do you call it? Maize bread, corn bread, whatever it is, you know. So the point is that it only excludes those five things. If you say stam pas or stam tavua. Tavua literally means produce, but since idiomatically it usually refers to grains, so it's referring to those five grains. That's the Reb Meir. And the chacham add on, the omrim hanoder min ha'dagan, they add to the list, they agree if you say pas is forbidden to me, or you say tavu is forbidden to me, that includes just the five grains. But the word dagan, which means literally means that which is piled up. But against idiomatically, the rabbis say dagan really may technically in the dictionary mean that which is piled up, but it's referring to the five grains, you know, colloquially how it's used. And therefore, if you say dagan, eno asar el mehen, that it forbids you is not the fact that you also can pile up cherries. Dagan is a reference. And when human beings say dagan is asar alai, they're referring to the five grains. And v'chayav and b'chalav ma'isras, no chiddush here. It just says in bread made out of these five grains, a chayav and chala, you have to give a portion of the dough away. U'ma'isras, and also of course you have to take hafrashas to the Kohen and the Levi and so on. There's no chiddush there. We said that already in the previous Mishnah. Just it's coming to be in contradistinction to the next Mishnah, which talk about things that have either chala and not ma'isra, or ma'isra and not chala. So Mishnah Gimel says, Elo chayav and b'chala. These things are, when they're dough, they'll be chayav and chala, u'ptur min ha-maisras, but as wheat stalks, you know, or any of the five, you know, then there's no chayav to give maisras, which refers to truma, maisra, and so on, maisra sheni, etc. So first of all, the first three are the gifts you give to the poor. Ha-leket, ba-shecha, ba-feya. The leket is that when you're harvesting, a few stalks might drop out of your hands. So if one or two stalks drop, and you're plucking them, you know, uprooting them off the ground, and those stalks of wheat fall to the ground, you have to leave them for the poor people. Vashicha, shicha is forgotten sheaves. When you bundle them up into little piles, and then you, little like mini sheaves, you know, bundles, and then you'll bring that all to the threshing floor. If you forget a few bundles out in the field, one or two at a time, so then you have to leave those, not go back for them. And literally, shicha means that which is forgotten. Vahapeya, the corner of your field, you have to leave a corner, so those things are all left for the poor people. And those things are exempt from hafrashas ever. You never take truma or maaser on pe leket, shicha leket and peya. The reason why is because it says, when referring to the maaser, it says uvaha levi, and the levi will come ki ein lo chelek, because he hasn't got a portion of the land, so he needs to rely on you for your food. So that's why he's getting his maaser. But in these things, since they're abandoned, the pasuk says tazovotam, abandon them for the levi, the gear, and so he does have he has a portion of them. So therefore, equally portion to anybody else, and therefore there's no special mitzvah to give them any hafrashas. Also, vahefker. So in other words, if you leave those on the ground, and the ani comes and picks them up, so he gets a shichcha bundle, there's no hafrashas required, but if he turns it into a loaf of bread, he'll have to take challah afterwards. That's the point of the Mishnah. And hefker, the same thing. Vahefker, if a person just abandons his, you know, wheat stalks, so then hefker is part from hafrashas, but for the same reason, because the levi has equal access to it. But if you make it into a loaf of bread, again, the challah has to be taken. Umaisa Rishon Shnit the Trumaso. This is a little more confusing. Maisa Rishon is the gift to the levi. So now, normally what happens is you give Truma Gadola, 2% of your whole harvest to a Kohen, Truma Gadola, and then you give 10% of what remains. Let's say if you had 100 stalks, 2 went to the 100 barrels, let's say. So 2 of the barrels go to the Kohen. Of the 98 remaining barrels, you're going to give 9.8 of them, 10%, to the levi. Okay? And then the levi of his 9.8 barrels will give 10% of that as what's called trumas meiser to the Kohen also. He gives that truma to the Kohen also, so he'd give 0.98 barrels. That's how it normally would work. But if the levy comes early to the barrels, so I guess the wine press, before you've, whatever, let's talk grain for a second, barrels of wheat. So before you finished all the processing of the wheat and making smooth piles, so there's no chiv of truma yet. So if the levy comes and says, give me my meiser now, you don't need to take truma off, he can sort of jump the queue and get his maaser before the truma is ever chayev. So instead of getting 9.8, he'll get a full 10, right? He jumped the line, so now he gets a full 10. And when he gives, he'll have to still give 10% of his 10, which is one barrel, to as truma's maaser to the Kohen, but he gets up getting a sliver more. So that's the case here. If the levi came early and he took maaser rishon that never had truma gadola taken from it, as long as he takes the truma, so as long as he takes truma, meaning the truma's meiser, it's gives his truma that he gives to the Kohen, even so, it's pata from afshus, meaning no truma gedol will ever be taken from this grain. Okay, and yet, if he makes it, if the, that's all we're saying. We're saying that the Kohen is permanently cut out of the deal. That's the point of this line here. However, when he, Levi, makes it into bread, he'll have to give challah. And also, meiser sheni. Meiser sheni, remember, is the food you take to Jerusalem. So there, Meiser Sheni is exempt from Hafrashas, but if you go to Jerusalem, make dough there, you take challah. The Hekdesh and Niftu, and similarly, Hekdesh, that's if a person makes his grain in his field, he says this is going to be the base of Mikdash's field, and then the base of Mikdash processes it, and you know, after they process it, they put in the granary and they start selling, you know, 5 kilogram, you know, sacks of wheat to everyone to buy them, and then buying it deconsecrates the money. The money goes to base of Mikdash, and then the actual wheat in the sacks is deconsecrated. So that's sheniftu, that was redeemed. So there, so when the person who buys that sack of wheat, he need not give any hafrashas to it, because when it was chayiv in the hafrashas, meaning when the finishing the processing happened, it was owned by the Beit Mikdash, which is Hashem, and it says ktzirchem, your harvesting, not Hashem's harvesting, so it'll be exempt. But when that person buys the sack of wheat and then turns it into bread, you have to give challah still. Okay. Umut umosar haomer, the leftovers of the omer. So omer remembers that barley offering again given the second day of Pesach. Mosar, leftovers. What happens is, you start with a huge amount of barley flour. But barley is quite a coarse and relatively horrible grain to eat. It's used for animals normally. So they sifted it and sifted it and sifted it and sifted it 13 times, and the vast majority didn't make the grade. So starting out with a big thing, I think they started with 3 saw. Started with 3 saw, but it's all the time it's all done. They ended up with like one little omer, like reduced 30th of what was once there, for 13 siftings. So that the rest, the little bit that makes the grade, that's going to be used for the offering and the korban, and the rest of it is basically just sold up to the base mikdash. And people, of course, I'm sure that Sotheby's can fetch a high price for this year's, you know, omer leftovers. And so that, since it was in the base mikdash property, it will be exempt from afrashas. But if you make bread out of it, you'll take challah and give it. Utvua shlo hevi shlish, and finally, if you take grain before it grew a third of its growing, so now it's not considered to have even been grain yet, and therefore there's no hafrashas required. We saw this a topic of onus of maestros, a grain needs a third of its growth, but then if you decide to make that horrible premature grain into bread, it's edible, and you'll be over, you can be yilti for Pesach with matzah with it, and you can be over karas if you eat it on Pesach, and chametz, etc. It's bread. So therefore, when you make it into a dough, you have to take a piece to the Kohen as challah. And Rabbi Eliezer argues on the last point. He says, tvush lehevi shlish, if the grain never grew a third by the time you harvested it, so then peturim in a challah, it's totally pata from challah, because the pasuk says that calls the challah truma. In fact, that's really, challah is just a made-up term almost. It's really, there's no difference. It says it's like truma, so therefore if it's pater and truma, it's pater and challah also. Okay, and finally Mishnah Dalet talks about the other way around, that things that are chayiv and maestros, but if you make them into dough, they'll be pater from challah. So that's a perek aleph Mishnah Dalet in challah. So we say, el chayiv and maestros pater and challah, these things are chayiv and maestros, but actually if you make it to dough, they'll be exempt, the dough will be exempt. So it's going to be things that aren't really of the five minim. For example, ha'orez, if you make bread out of rice, v'adochan, or bread out of millet, v'pragim, perik is a poppy seed dough, v'ashumshmin, and sesame seed dough, v'kitnios, and really all of the kitnios, these four things really already are kitnios. Kitnios in the Mishnaic language means, it's translated incorrectly as legumes. Right?
Small.
Right. Oh, what it means is, this is the technical definition. Any plant that you grow, that the what you eat of the plant is the seeds. The only exception is the five grains. You follow? The five grains, it's the same tree. When you grow wheat, those little kernels, it has a special status called one of the five species. But in other words, not pumpkin seeds, because pumpkin seeds you grow for the pumpkins, and the seeds are an afterthought, so to speak. But rice, yeah, peanuts. And that's why it's translated as legumes often, because legumes, pulses, things like beans and peas, that's the thing we're most used to eating in the raw state. It's like you're eating a seed, you eat a bean, that's a seed. But it includes, you know...
So legumes would be one subcategory within kidney.
That's right.
Or a major. So
right, for practical terms, it's the main thing. But corn is a good example, right? Corn is a good example. It's a new world produce, wasn't in the old world. But if we don't eat corn as kitnios, because we say that it is a kitnios. You're eating the little like the kernels, which makes it kitnios. Okay, so, yeah, is that posted the plants? You know, most vegetables you eat when you're eating a tomato, you're eating the fruit, or when you're eating a cabbage, you're eating the plants. But this you're eating the seeds. That's for kitnios. Okay. And similarly, if the quantity of dough is less, the flour that goes into the dough is less than five, the flour that goes into the dough is less than 5/4 of a kav of tevua, that's going to be somewhere between, on the lowest side, 1 1/4, and the highest side, like, I think, I got 2 1/4 kilos, 2 1/4 kilos of flour, which it comes out that the shear given all over the place is 43 eggs amount, as a little mnemonic to remember how it's 43.2 eggs exact.
Where do you see that shear?
First of all shearim in the Torah are actually halacha l'mosh m'sinai. You should know that for every shear. Like people wonder, everyone like where bar mitzvah is 13 years old or like, who says?
Where does it say 43 eggs?
Oh, I'm just telling. It says 5/4 of a kav. But I'm telling you the mathematics. If you do the conversion, it'll work out. So
there's never any machlokes over shearim.
Sure, there is.
I don't know if there are.
Not about what Kazai. Well, not about what Kazai translates out to in our terms. But like, do some people say no? It doesn't need to be Kazai. That's what I'm saying. How we translate Kazai?
Well, there are machlokes. The truth is, like for example, we've seen machlokas for benching. We saw like if it's a kazayas or kabetza a few times in different things. But midoraisa. I think there's a machlokas if you. I don't know. Nothing comes to mind. That Rambam that says no machlokas over halacha l'mosh m'sinai is like fraught with kashas.
Actually, we don't really know what a kav is. We just extract the kavas.
I know what a kav. We know what a kav is. We know what a kav is. I mean, the way I've been telling you the kav the whole time, remember, is. The saw was the six pack of water, 12 liters, and then each of those bottles, 2 liters, is called a kav. So I think 2 liters. There's a machlokas. He wasn't referring to that. I know what he meant. He meant that the Rambam says elsewhere that anything that's halacha l'mosh m'sinai, that there was a tradition from Moses from Sinai, there's no machlokas over that. So he was asking on that lines. I'm just telling you, I once went to Yochanan Bechaver. Yochanan Bechaver once gave a series of shirim, Rabbi Vine. Okay. So he gave, I forgot how many, but like, I have a whole set of tape, I have a whole tape library, like 30 tapes or more, recordings of that shir, just on that one point of kashas and tzurutz of the Rambams, like halach l'moshe Sinai, isn't machlokas. Like it's a nightmarishly large topic. So what he said is fraught with kashas, put it like that. Okay, anyways, leaving that alone for a second. So a kav, think of it as a 2-liter bottle. Okay, so that comes out to 43.2 eggs. I'm just giving a mnemonic to remember 43.2 is that chala is gematria 43. It's not the reason why. It just happens to work out that way.
Eggs we have today are probably very different than the eggs they had.
Maybe. We discussed it. Maybe. Okay.
Bigger hens. Bigger.
We actually think they're smaller. Probably they're smaller. But anyway, the eggs are smaller. Anyways, neither here nor there. Now, I just want to speak that out, though. So without getting into the whole 15 minutes of mathematics again that we did yesterday, whatever day it was. So here's how it works in short and simple. Is there a kav, so we said that the saw is the 6 kavin, a kav is 1 2-liter bottle, we're talking about quarter kavin, so a quarter of a kav is like 500 cc, let's call it, okay? Called a rova kav, and so there are obviously 4 rova kav and 1 kav, and there is 6 eggs in a rova kav. Okay, 6 eggs in a rova kav, which means that if you figure there are 6 eggs in a rova kav, and 4 rova kavs in a regular kav, 4 quarter kavs in a kav, you're going to come out to 24 eggs in 1 kav. We said 5/4 kavin, so that's going to come out to 5/4 to 24, like 1 1/4, going to come out to an extra 6, so it'll be a total of 30. A total of 30 eggs in 5/4 of a kav. So the way you stem up between 30 eggs in the math, which is how it is, and 43, which is the actual shear, is like this. Twice in the course of the rabbis, they did like an inflation on all the shirim, and they multiply things by 1.2. I'm not getting into how or why or what, but that's what they did. So, so the original things are called Midos Midbarios, the measurements of the desert. So, at that time, indeed, 30 eggs would be equal to 5/4 of a kav. But now, then they have called Midos Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem measurements, which they added 1.2 to it, multiplied by 1.2. So what happens now is you'll have, instead of using regular eggs, you use like 20% bigger eggs. So if you multiply 30 by 1.2, you'll get to 36. So in other words, in the time of the Midos Yerushalmi, whenever they use those measurements, whenever they did that, during Bais Sheni's time, so there'll be 36 eggs in 5/4 of a kav. Because the kavim are getting bigger, essentially. But the eggs are staying the same, but the kavim are getting bigger. And then, later on, they moved to Tzipori. That's where Rebbe is from, Sepphoris. So they did they multiplied by 1.2. So the kavim became 20% larger again. So now instead of being 36 times 1.2 comes out to 43.2 eggs. So that's how now 5 kavim are 5 Tzipori kavim, which actually would fit 43.2 eggs. That's how it comes out. Okay.
That's it.
Yeah.
Like taxes.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, death, taxes, and inflation. You should remember that one. So yeah, very good.
If you need to figure out like why it's a little bit higher than you want, just add the mom.
That's right. So okay, so the last thing is here. Certain things you make out of flour aren't chayv in challah. For example, first of all, hasufganin. Sufganin are maybe like we call sufganiyot, like donut-y things, or maybe it's more like a pancake, because the two pshat, either it means it's like starts from a thin dough. I don't know how you make donuts. We call sufganiyot, but I don't know, but it's probably made from a thick dough. But I think I'm imagining pancakes, pancake batter, which if you cook, it's like thin and spongy, and sfog pumash, and like sponge. Right, so that's one pshat, and since it's made of a thin, not made of a dough, it's made of more like a batter, it's exempt. Or alternatively, the rakikin, they're, what do you call it, like the rakikin wafers. So again, it's thin. Since it's thin, it doesn't count. Okay? It doesn't count as a dough.
Like lafa?
Lafa, yeah. Well, it depends how you make it. If you make it like starts out as a dough, and you bake it in an oven in the heat, then for sure, that's your classic bread. And that's how lafa, I'm sure, was. That's how bread was back then. But so one example is sufganin, and we'll learn that's because it's like, well, look, think of it as a pancake for now. Since it's a batter, so it's exempt, it's not a dough. Also a dubshanin. By the way, these halachas are nogei also for things like lisha itself. The malacha lisha on Shabbos is different if you're talking about a thin batter or a thick batter. I'm not getting into it more now, but notice that. Same with other halacha ramifications. Okay, hadubshanin, from the word dvash, either means like baked, fried, let's learn one shot, fried in honey. So fried, since it's fried and not baked, it doesn't count as being a dough that's chayav and challah. So this would be regular, not necessarily thin batter, but since you're not going to bake it in oven and dry heat, you're going to fry it in honey, so then it'll be exempt. Tom shot. The eskritin. Eskritin are like, these are wafers from a thin batter. That's you can learn like, if we learn that the sugan are the pancakes, and that'll leave us this little bit like a crackers and wafers then. And that's one shot. The chalas ha-misharis, and also like loaves in the pan, which means one shot is that they're cooked in the pan. If they're cooked in the pan, that's not considered like to be cooked like a normal bread. If it's deep fried in a pan, or maybe they poured boiling water over it and it cooked from the outside, I guess that works, scalded. So those things are not normally baked in the normal way with a thick dough and dry heat in an oven, so therefore they'll be exempt from challah. And finally, a meduma. Meduma, you'll recall, is chulin, regular food that got mixed up with truma. So you learn that from Sukkim that you have to, when you have meduma, when you take challah, you have to take the truma out of the dough. So, and make it into truma. But if already some truma is already there, you're not making that part into truma. So I learned out that it's exempt. You can't be mirim the truma, because some of it already is truma. Therefore, anything that has some truma inside of it is exempt. So meduma, which is partly truma already, is pata from chala altogether. Fine, that's that. Okay, we're done.